We were discussing the Rambam's position concerning the importance of studying philosophy last week. We considered two different general approaches to the Rambam's attitude towards Greek philosophy in particular. As we mentioned, the Rambam's view, whatever it might be, was not universally accepted and was in fact the subject of rather significant debate. And I'd like to consider something we began discussing last week and just add a couple of additional makoros to why it is exactly that people objected, A, and B, those who objected, how they justified the Rambam's pursuit. So I think when we look at those who object to the study of philosophy, they fall into, generally speaking, two camps. The first, who don't necessarily categorically reject philosophy, but maintain that practically speaking, it is not a good idea because it's too dangerous. And the second are those who categorically reject the study of philosophy. So, for example, in the first camp, there's a famous piece from Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman in Kobet Shiurim, Chelek Beis, you have over here. And he pointed out that even though many Rishonim maintain that the proper path to Emuna is through proof or seeking proof, he's not talking about philosophy in general, but specifically that Emuna should be grounded in proof. Nevertheless, nowadays, Shchichi Hazeka, it's too dangerous, and therefore, practically speaking, all would agree that that's not the proper path. There's a fascinating comment of the Tzlach, actually, along these lines, maybe even going further, on Brachos, on Chav Zayin Amud Beis. Let's see, what page is it on? Anyone find it yet? Oh, sorry? 11, Shkayach, 11 and 12. Okay, so, where is 11? Yeah. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Kshachala Rabbi Elazar, Nichnesu Talmidav Levakro. Amrulo, Rabbeinu Lamadnu Orchos Chaim, V'nizka Ben L'chayel Maba. Lamdeinu, sorry. Orchos Chaim, V'nizka Bahan L'chayel Maba. So, they asked their Rabbi, Rabbi Elazar, for some advice on his deathbed. Amr Lahem Yizaru, B'chvod Chavrechem, U'min'u B'neichem Min Ha'higayon, V'oshivum Bein Birkei Talmidei Chachamim. Kshatem ispaulim de'u lifnei mi atem omdim uvishvil kach tizkeu l'chaylam abba. So what exactly does he mean by uminu v'nechem min ha-higayon? What does higayon mean? Take a look at Rashi on that Gemara and Rashbam and Sefer Bereishis. They understand it's referring to Tanakh, which is an interesting discussion in and of itself, why he would advise them against the study of Tanakh. But the Tzlach understands Higayon to refer to logic, and he was advising them not to teach their children logic. Now, what's wrong with logic? After all, logic is presumably something that knowing how to use is a very important tool, perhaps an important tool even in the study of Torah. And the Tzlach answers that, yes, logic in and of itself might be valuable, but he gives an interesting mashal. Just like Chazal banned the public recitation of the Aseres HaDibros despite its value because heretics were claiming that it's only the Ten Commandments that must be observed, so too Rabbi Elazar recommended against teaching one's children logic despite its value, lest it lead to the study of philosophy, which could lead one to reject the entire Torah. What he's telling us is that a person has to be very careful in terms of what they study and what they teach their children, because you have to be aware and realistic where it might end up. Now, yes?
How can Rabbi Chanan say that now it's more dangerous? It was really dangerous in the round time before.
It's a very good and interesting question, and he doesn't elaborate. In other words, there's no doubt, as in fact the Rambam himself points out, that there is a, and there was a significant danger in the studying of philosophy, and there always was. I don't think Rabbi Chanan is denying that it was always dangerous. However, he felt that either it was more dangerous, or with respect to the cost-benefit analysis, it wasn't worth it. Now, you know, Rabbi Chanan lived at a time where people were going off the derech left and right. Now, you could argue that that would demand more of, there would be a greater need to study philosophy. But Rabbi Chanan's approach is no. Certainly, to those he was addressing, the better approach is to stay away. And that was his understanding of the hezek.
So what did he mean by one should be grounded in proof?
No, so he said there are some, many, he said there's this big machlokas rishonim. Should emuna be grounded in proof? So Rambam and Rabbeinu Bach in Chovos Salvavos and Rav Sadia Gaon and others say yes. And others say no. We'll discuss that machlokas later. And he said, even though that was once a machlokas, and at one point it was perhaps reasonable to take the approach that emuna should be grounded in proof, but nowadays that's not the right approach. And that's because everybody would agree that if the attempt to seek proof is likely to lead one to actually reject faith, so then the better approach to faith would be that faith be rooted in Masorah or other ideas. Again, we'll have a chance to discuss them. Well, we'll discuss the other options. Maybe we have to figure out what Emuna Pshuta means. But yes, exactly. Now, if we take a look at maybe an approach to a more categorical rejection of philosophy, take a look on page 12. Here are the comments from the Gaon. We'll just read it and try to explain what he means. The philosophia hitaso, philosophy caused, he's referring here to the Rambam, to make a mistake. Berov lekha, with its fair speech, lefaresh hagemara hakol bederach hatzliyi v'la'akor osan mi pashtan. So the Gaon here is referring to the Rambam's position on magic. The Rambam denied that there is such a thing as magic. When Chazal or the Torah refer to magic and people being able to do magic, it's not that they actually could do magic, but they were illusionists. They excelled at sleight of hand, and there is no such thing as magic. That's the view of the Rambam. And what the Gaon here is saying is that it was philosophy or the philosophical approach that forced Rambam, or that misled Rambam and caused him to be oker psukim chazal mi pashtusam. There's no doubt that when you read, let's say, Parshas Shmos kipshuto, that the implication is that there is such a thing as magic, and that in fact is exactly what the mechashvim of Paro were doing. And likewise, there are stories in Chazal about certain things that Mechashvim were able to do and the need to stay away from them and the like. And the Rambam was convinced by philosophy that this is false, that there's no such thing as magic, and then he had to reread the Psukim in a way that conformed with philosophy, namely to claim that this was just sleight of hand, and this is something that's wrong. Now, despite the Gaon's rejection of philosophy, it is interesting to note that he did feel that there was significant value in the pursuit of other wisdoms. However, the Gaon maintained that these wisdoms emerge organically from Torah, as opposed to looking from without, as the Rambam did, to discover them. Reb Yisrael Mishklov, in his introduction to the Pas HaShulchan, and he was a Talmud of the Gra, writes that the Gaon advocated the pursuit of all seven branches of Chachma, which include math and medicine and logic and music and chemistry, but he maintained that they were all within the Torah, or can be found, they could be discovered within the Torah. I didn't include this citation here, but I'll read it to you. I didn't include it in your shore sheets. Ko amar hagra, ko chachmos nitzrachim l'torasenu hakdosha, all chachmos are needed to understand the Torah, v'klulim ba, however, they're included within the Torah. And he writes how the Gra knew all these chachmos, v'hizkir chachmas algebra, umishulashim, trigonometry, geometry, the Handasa, the Chachmas Musica, etc., etc. Veir Echos Kol Chachmos, the Amar Sheisigam Letachlisam. So, the Al Chachmas Philosophia Amar Shalamda Letachlisa. In the Hakadama of the Vilna Gaon to Sifra Ditzniusa Parakei, he writes that all wisdom, and not just wisdom, but future events and the like, could be discovered within Torah if you know how to read it. Vaklal ki kol ma shehaya v'hoveh v'yiyah ad olam hakol kalul b'torah mibireishis ad le'enei kol Yisrael v'lo aklalim bilvad el afilu pratav shel kol min u'min v'shel kol adam b'frat v'chol ma she'ira lo miyom hivaldo ad sofo, etc., etc. This is very similar to the famous comments of the Ramban in his Hakdama to Chumash. Now, the Gaon is telling us, and to be fair, there is some debate, and we'll elaborate on this in a moment, about what the Vilna Gaon's position was exactly, and there were those who claimed, even among his Talmidim, that there was a debate. And it's also true, to complicate matters, that there were certain maskilim who tried to, you know, claim the Gaon was in their camp and look to the Gaon as a paradigm of Torah, Mada, and the like, and distorted his position without a doubt. But what he's saying is that there is a value to Chachma, but all Chachma that is of any value can be discovered within the Torah. Now, part of the question is that, what does that mean for me? Meaning to say, I've no doubt that the Vilna Gaon was able to look at Torah and, like his Talmidim say, discover algebra. Okay, but I don't know how to do that. So if you think that knowing algebra is valuable, so we are left with two choices. Either if you maintain that one should look to Torah exclusively, so then I'll be stuck not knowing algebra, and he said that my Talmud Torah will be worse off because of that, or we could say that, well, in that case, I should look elsewhere. And then we have to consider whether that applies to algebra, and what about to philosophy. Rav Baruch Mishklov, a different Talmud, writes, and again, this is one of the comments that some have claimed is not precise, though it is important to note that this was published during the Gaon's lifetime, which leads most, I think, to believe that it was probably accurate. But he writes that the Vilna Gaon encouraged him to translate Euclid into Hebrew so that people who didn't read Latin would be able to study geometry. And that's because he quotes, this is, he quotes, Shamati mipi kadosh, ki kafima sheyachzar la'adam yedias mishari achachmos, luma ze yachzar lo mea yados b'chachmos ha-Torah, ki ha-Torah v'chachma nitzmadim yachad. So that being the case, it's important to even read Euclid, because not everybody is able to discover geometry simply by learning Erevin. And perhaps you find a similar idea in the Ramban. The Ramban, as we noted, says that all Chachma could be found within the Torah in his Hakdama to his Pershal HaTorah. At the same time, if you take a look, for example, at his Drashas Tars Hashem Tamima, where he writes about the Maila of Chachma HaTorah over Chachma HaTeva, that's how he understands that capital in Tehillim. But nevertheless, he seems to acknowledge that there is sometimes value to looking elsewhere. So why then his staunch and vehement opposition to philosophy? So the answer is because, and this is seen in his critique of the Rambam, what the Rambam did was totally inappropriate, he claims, namely to accept an idea from philosophy and then shtup it into Torah, or reread Torah in light of what's discovered mibachutz. So what was terribly wrong that the Rambam did was accept a certain doctrine, let's say the impossibility of magic, based off of his pursuit of philosophy, and then reread Torah in that light. Now, whether or not that's what the Rambam did is debatable, and that very much relates to our discussion last week, and presumably the Rambam would not have seen it as such, but nevertheless, that's where the danger lies. So, to summarize a very big topic, which is not for now, Chazal tell us that Chachma Bagayim Tamin, Torah Bagayim Al Tamin, and even if we accept that there is value to even on occasion looking to the Gayim to gain that Chachma, nevertheless, defining the difference between Chachma and Torah is not always straightforward. And essentially what the Gayim was arguing is that with respect to philosophy, so that's when you turn to Chachma Sagayim for Torah, so that is where the danger lies and where it's inappropriate. Yes?
According to what you're explaining now, wouldn't they go into the same Tainan, let's say someone who read an algebra textbook and then had a Tainan like this, that's Erevin, like, oh, look, Chazal got it wrong?
Well, yes and no. In other words, it depends on their perspective. If they study algebra because they're not as knowledgeable in Torah and therefore they can't get it from Torah, and then their understanding of algebra leads them to a question on Erevin, in your example. So if that leads to a rejection of Erevin, then obviously it's wrong. Or if it leads to a forced reading of Erevin, that's wrong. Now, obviously, what's considered a forced reading and what isn't is not always clear. So if someone goes ahead and studies geometry and then they look at the psukim in Melachim and they say, ah, there's a stira between Chazal and geometry because in that case it's the Torah, Tanakh and geometry, because according to Tanakh, pi is 3. And so I don't think there are various ways to suggest a resolution, but I don't think that that's necessarily the case, that saying, giving an answer that doesn't, you know, other than saying no, pi is actually 3, and anyone that says otherwise is a heretic, that doesn't mean that's the only approach. But again, when you're dealing with a question like that, one has to be very careful that they're not imposing the outside upon the Torah. At the same time, if it could be proven, and this is again a point that the Rambam makes again and again, if something can be proven to be true, then it's true. And the Torah is also true. So, therefore, we might have to look at the Torah differently in light of what we know from either Chachma or experience or Metzias and the like. Now, where to draw the line? So that, of course, is the very difficult question. And as we'll see, where many of the debates hinge. And there is no clear-cut, straightforward answer. And again, that's, you know, as we're saying, that's really where a lot of times the debates lie. So the Gaon accused the Rambam of going too far in this respect. The Rambam would have responded that no, you know, this could be shown to be true, and therefore it's inconceivable the Torah is saying otherwise, and therefore the proper reading of the Torah, despite perhaps the simplistic reading of the Torah being otherwise, is something else. Okay. Now, if, as we've seen, there are those that very much did criticize the Rambam's pursuit of philosophy, so how did they justify the Rambam's pursuit? Meaning to say, after all is said and done, everybody agrees and acknowledges the Rambam's greatness, so his position can't simply be dismissed. So there's an interesting approach to this in the Rivash, which you have over here in page 12. And the Rivash suggests a number of solutions, or at least parts of a solution. First of all, the Rivash says, because philosophy does contain heretical ideas, such as the eternity of matter or rejection of Hashgacha Pratis, so then it should not be studied. He distinguishes between philosophy and science. Science is permitted, though he doesn't think it's a particularly good use of time. But philosophy, because it's heretical, is usur. He also rejects those who claim that you need to study philosophy to have proper emuna. He invokes people like the Rashba and Rav Haigon as sources for his prohibition against the study of philosophy. And then he asks, well, how could the Rambam have studied philosophy? And he has several points. First of all, he says, Rambam mastered Kol HaTorah Kula before studying philosophy. Ve'im lahavi rayam in a Rambam, if you see where I am. Ki hu lamad kodem lachen Kol HaTorah Kula b'shlemos halachos v'agados tosefto sifra v'sifrei v'chulei talmuda bavli v'yushalmi kimo shenira me'sefer Mishnah Torah shechiber. I think what he's saying is, look, he wrote the Mishnah Torah first before he wrote the Mora, and look, he knew everything from the Mishnah Torah. That's not exactly precise, because it's clear he studied philosophy well before he wrote the Mishnah Torah. You see this, for example, in the Perashat Mishnayos. But it certainly might be the case that the Rambam had mastered Torah before pursuing the study of philosophy. Then he writes, a little later, Ukadei lahashiv es apikores asa sefer hamora listor hamovsim v'arayo shehevi ha-filosof l'kayim kadmas olam v'chein b'inyin ha-shkacha l'fi shayu b'zmanu harbi m'Yisrael nevuchim b'ikrei ha-Torah mipnei ma shelamdu min ha-chachmahi. He basically says that the more nevuchim is begader dama l'hashiv l'apikores. Now, it is true that the Morah was written to help those studying philosophy reconcile the Torah and philosophy, as he writes in his introduction, that in fact is the purpose of the work. And we should also note that he was successful in many respects. The Ramban, in his famous long letter defending the Rambam, writes how many Jews were enamored with philosophy, and because of the Rambam, they remained faithful. He writes, I'll just read you a small quote, again, I didn't put it here, and in translation, concerning many of the Spanish and Provençal Jews, at least in upper societies in the 13th century, they have filled their belly with the foolishness of the Greeks. They make fun of the trusting souls. They do not enter profoundly into the ways of Torah. The ways of alien children suffice for them. But for the words of the Rambam, but for the fact that they live out of the mouth of his works, they would have slipped almost entirely. In other words, he writes, the Ramban writes, that if it wasn't for the Mor Nevuchim, generations of people would have been lost. And it was because of the Rambam that they were able to maintain the faith, because the Rambam succeeds in presenting all of Torah in a rationalist way. He notes that the Rambam's effect was so great, though in a different sense, for the Jews of Teman, that they included the Rambam in their Kaddish. In Teman, they don't do this anymore, but the Ramban writes, in his day, they used to say, B'chayichon uv'yomechon v'chay d'rabne Moshe ben Maimon, Bagalo v'zman Karim. They included him in Kaddish because he was their savior. So, the Rambam, as the Rivash writes, was incredibly successful in saving people from going off the derech with his Mar Nevuchim. At the same time, it's hard to argue that the Rambam felt that the only value in studying philosophy is because anyway people are studying it and they have questions and it's entirely begeder dama lahashiv. The Rambam does on many occasions encourage his students to study philosophy, and he has a whole curriculum and the way in which they should study it, and it does seem pretty clear that he thought that this was valuable and religiously valuable on its own right. Then the Rivash makes another distinction. He says that unlike most people who study philosophy, I'll get to you in one second, Rambam was capable of distinguishing between that which was valuable and true within Aristotle's writings and that which is false. And he invokes the paradigm of Rebbe Meir, who studied Torah from Acher, from Elisha ben Avuya, despite his heretical beliefs. And the Gemara writes that, generally speaking, people should not do this. A person must make sure that their Rebbe is Kemalach Hashem Tzivakos, and therefore it asks, how could Reb Meir do it? And the Gemara answers that Reb Meir was capable, due to his greatness, of being able to sift through and distinguish between the wheat and the chaff. And the same thing was true for Rambam, but it is not true for most of us. In fact, he even has a diuk in the Rambam that this is the correct pshat, because the Gemara says, what was the basis for a mayor doing this? The pasuk hat az nachau shma divrei chachamim v'libcha tashis l'dati. And if you look at the beginning of Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam also quotes that same pasuk. Hat az nacha ushma divrei chachamim. So the Rivash says, you see, he was being merames to this yesod. And then the Rivash concludes, nevertheless, despite all this, the Rambam did not emerge unscathed. V'im kol zeh lo nimlad harav mehemshech k'tzas achar hachachma b'k'tzas hamofsim. And he gives a number of examples of mistakes that the Rambam made due to his allegiance to philosophy, including the tzarfasis. I assume he means that the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim that was not true tchias hamesim. It looked like the child was dead, but he wasn't fully dead. And the Rambam's position on Matan Torah, I think he probably means that the Rambam maintains that the kol at Sinai was an undifferentiated sound, and it's not that they literally heard Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And his position concerning the impossibility of angels taking on a physical form, and therefore his creative reading of this story of the three Malachim visiting Avram Avinu that Ramban critiques. And then the Rivash says, maybe even the Rambam didn't really mean what he said in the Mor Nevuchim, and he only wrote them because he knew that he couldn't dissuade followers of philosophy with the undiluted truth. So, ulai lo haya kavanaso rak basher lo yucha lahashiv hanashim ahem legamre min hakatzeh lakatzeh. So, like the Rambam writes, you can't go from one extreme to another, so he presented theories which he himself didn't even fully agree to, but would allow perhaps those who have fully accepted philosophy and philosophical doctrines to also accept the Torah. Yes?
So you mentioned that the Rambam had a curriculum.
Yes.
First of all, where is that?
There's a couple of places where he cites it. One is in a letter to Rav Shmuel Ibn Tibon. And it's in his Igros. After I could show you the exact citation.
But that reject the first answer that Rivash also then? Can you, is he giving it to, if he's as a curriculum for his students and his students haven't mastered all Torah yet, assuming?
No, not, well, presumably. We're going to see, and that we could even see that right now, how much of Torah does one have to know before studying philosophy according to the Rambam? The Rambam addresses this point explicitly, so we'll see what the Rambam says. But presumably, he was writing to a student that he felt had reached a level of Torah knowledge that made it permissible to study esoteric wisdom. The Rambam in both Mishneh Torah as well as his Hakdama to Mor Nevuchim tells us what is necessary to know before pursuing Pardes. We'll read it in just a moment, but it's certainly reasonable to assume that the Rambam expected that his students that he was writing to had reached that level. Now, part of the question within the Rambam, and we'll talk about this in a moment, is did the Rambam mean to say that you have to know Kol HaTorah Kula, Shas and Poskim and the like? Is that what he meant by Lechem Ubasar? Or did he mean something that's a little bit less? So we'll return to that question. But I think you could definitely assume that that whatever Rambam felt you must know, he was advocating the study of philosophy only for people who knew that. Now, again, maybe that is, you know, the Rivash and the Rambam disagree about how much you have to know, but they both certainly agree that there are prerequisites within Torah Hanigla between exoteric Torah before you could study the esoteric wisdom.
According to the Rivash.
Sorry. No.
The second camp that we said is categorical rejection, it says everything comes from the Torah. Would they be able to claim the Rambam, or is it too much of a stretch?
The Rivash is trying to. And almost.
Because he already knows all Torah, therefore it's okay to learn philosophy.
Right, and assuming that you don't get, you know, that doesn't distort, and then he says, yeah, well, even the Rambam might have been distorted, but, you know, what he's doing is, you know, he might say, if you want it, he it's pretty clear that he doesn't fully embrace what the Rambam did, but at the same time, he's saying that the Rambam cannot be seen as a precedent, even by those who accept the Rambam, to pursue philosophy before having achieved an extraordinarily high level of Torah scholarship and having the ability to decipher between the wheat and the chaff. Yes?
According to the Rivash, why was the Rambam so controversial initially if he was just writing the Mora just to be Mdam Malahashis, so all the rabbis should be like, wow, that's great, you're doing Mdam Malahashis.
So I don't know if the Rivash had felt the need to be Miyashev those who detracted, and especially inappropriately detracted afterwards. It's also true that, you know, anytime you write a book, even if it's Begeder Dam Malahashiv, if it contains things that are false or that are true but might mislead people who misunderstand them, so then that's very dangerous. And therefore, even if you believe that he was writing it Begeder Dam Malahashiv, and even if you believe he was successful in that, that doesn't take away from the dangers or the need to oppose. If practically speaking, it's also going to be harmful. But again, I don't know. The Rivash in this piece is being miyashev the Rambam in light of what he thinks is generally usher. He's not. He doesn't need to be miyashev those who opposed. Yeah.
So, according to the Rivash is against philosophical thought. I know in another chapter the Rivash basically writes against Kabbalistic thought as well. He says that.
When we talk about Kabbalah, we could do the Rivash's opposition to Kabbalah.
Okay, fine.
It was a different. It's a different opposition. I mean, it's similar, but it's really very different, his opposition to Kabbalah.
But what does that leave him with? Like, how is he supposed to answer these basic questions? Like, free will, how does he deal with it? He doesn't have any system to use. Like, how does he...
Okay, I don't... There is actually a tshuva, since you brought it up, of the Rivash on free will. So you could take a look. It's actually a critique of Ralbag. But anyhow, so The Rivash was able to address these problems, and I think the answer is you could address it within Torah and using Torah sources without the need to turn to external sources. His rejection of mysticism is not a wholesale rejection of mysticism. He thinks that mysticism was being misused and misappropriated and misunderstood. People were davening to Sphiros and the like, and we'll return to that. But I think it's a separate though related question, and again, the Rivash feels that you can address the issue of free will without turning to Kabbalah, and at the same time without turning to philosophy. In fact, he does. Ayin Shem. It's a very interesting mahalich that he has, actually. Okay. Halach l'maisa, how do we paskin? So, I'm not going to be a machriya ben ashli ravervi, but it is worthwhile to note what the Rama writes. So the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, you have it over here in Yerodeus, Reish Mem Vav Dalet, Hagah ve'en la'adam lilmod ki emikra, Mishnah u'gemara v'aposkim hanim shachan achareihem, u'vizeh yikna ha'olam hazeh ve'olam haba, avalo b'limud shar chachmos. And who does he quote here, or at least the parentheses, which, as you know, may or may not be the Rama? The Rivash, gevaldik. Sounds like the Rama paskins like Rivash. Nevertheless, it is mutter, as long as it's be'akrai. We cited the tshuva, the Rama, earlier along similar lines. Uvilvad shelo yiyu sifrei minim, v'zehu nikra b'na chachamim til b'pardes. V'ein l'adam l'tayl b'pardes rak acha shemile kriso bas v'yayin, v'hu leida iser v'heter v'dine ha-mitzvos. Who's that? The Rambam! And he understands Pardes exactly as the Rambam did. This is one of the places that you don't have it here that the guy gets all upset at the Rambam. He says he didn't know what Pardes is and the Rambam didn't know what Pardes is. But the point is that the Gra, in the same Haggah, quotes both the Rambam and the Rivash. Which is remarkable, since perhaps at first glance you might have seen these two perspectives as being worlds apart. The Rama obviously didn't think that was true, and he felt that in a sense we paskin like both views. Now, that being said, I'd like to, having discussed the appropriateness of the study of philosophy, introduce the Sefer Mar Nevuchim. We're not going to obviously study all of Mar Nevuchim together, but I think it's worthwhile introducing it and considering some of the ideas that it says and its general mahalich. The Mar Nevuchim, yes.
You said there was a dispute as to the meaning of Tiul B'Pardes.
Right.
What are the two sides of that?
Is it referring to Kabbalah or to science and philosophy? So, first of all, when you read Rambam and even his philosophical writings, you see in the Rambam a passion, a fiery passion and love and emotional connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's not, as I mentioned before, this dry academic pursuit. There was, for many years, for five summers, we went to Edmonton, and we did summer kollelim there, Edmonton, Alberta. And the first year we went there, I had prepared a number of shiurim, and I also left some slots open. So when we got there, I asked, you know, what type of topics are you interested in hearing? And everybody said, or a lot of people said, Mar Nevuchim. Like, what? I had not studied much Mar Nevuchim at the time. And I was very taken aback. And I asked, why are you so interested in Mar Nevuchim? It's not something that's so regularly studied. A lot of it doesn't speak to modern audiences. So they said, well, we have these great chaburas in Mor Nevuchim, and we love it, so we want more. We can't get enough. So I said, who gives you chaburas in Mor Nevuchim? So it turns out that it was a fellow named Ezra Bavli. You might actually know a couple of his sons. They went to YU. And I got to know Ezra. He was my chavrusa. We went in Edmonton. Not in Mor Nevuchim. I didn't want to learn that with him. But we learned Pirshei Mishnayos on Rambam Taros and Kadshim and other things. Anyway, so I asked him, how did he get into Mor Nevuchim so much? So he told me, well, he's a helicopter pilot. He owns a business. He's Israeli. He moved to Edmonton after the army, and some guy comes up to him and asks him, he says, you know, you're Israeli, you're Jewish. He wasn't at all from. He said, you know, asks him a question about Jewish philosophy. So he felt a little bad. He didn't really know very much about Jewish philosophy. But the one book that he had heard of was the Mor Nevuchim. After all, if you think of, you know, one book of Jewish philosophy, it's going to be the Guide to Perplexed. So, you know, he took it out from the library and he started reading. And the more he read, the more he was inspired, until after, before he finished Mor Nevuchim, he was already from Shaar Torah Mitzvos, learning most of the day, and the like. And it all was because of the inspiration of Mor Nevuchim. So one should not underestimate. I'm not necessarily advocating that everyone, you know, immediately start studying Mor Nevuchim instead of Maseilas Yesharim during Moser Seder. But at the same time, it is remarkable that it is a powerful book, and it reflects a powerful yearning to understand the truth and fascinating perspectives on Torah. And the truth is, actually, a lot of Mor Nevuchim is not, or could not be classified as, a straightforward philosophy book. Lots of it is explaining psukim, lots of it is explaining Tamei HaMitzvos and the like. Now, so the first question that the Rambam deals in his Hakdama to Mor Nevuchim, as well as in the Mishnah Torah, is when is it appropriate to begin studying philosophy? And it's important when answering this question to remember that it's not just that someone insufficiently prepared will not understand philosophy. If I go to an advanced mathematics class or physics class, so I will simply not understand what's going on, and there's not too much harm in that. I'll leave confused. But when it comes to the topics that are dealt with in the Mor Nevuchim, so it's not just that if you're not prepared, you won't understand, but the concern is that you'll misunderstand. And the stakes are high, because it could certainly lead a person astray. And while the Rambam does maintain that having a correct conception of the Ribbono Shel Olam is essential to being Jewish, he does maintain as well that this could be achieved at least on a basic level without the study of philosophy. In other words, knowing God's incorporeality is a tenet of faith. It's one of the Yud Gimel Ikar Yemuna. Being able to prove it is not required. The Rambam does prove it, and he thinks it's valuable to be able to prove it, but you're a ma'amin if you know it's true, even if you're not able to prove it. Likewise, he proves the existence of God. A person could be a ma'amin if they believe in God, even without being able to prove the existence of God. Now, the framework for the Rambam's prerequisites for the study of philosophy are based off of the Gemara in Chagiga, Yud Aleph Amid Beis. And there, the Gemara prohibits teaching esoteric wisdom publicly, lest someone not understand it. And even among worthy students, they need individual attention to make sure that they don't make a mistake. And when it comes to Maisa Merkava, it cannot even be conveyed overtly, even to a worthy individual, but only with Rashi Prakim, with the student extrapolating the truth from that which the teacher presents. So if you take a look, we'll read it in the Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. Again, you will see similar ideas in Nachtam Tamar Nevuchim, and this could be found in page 17. Tivu chachamim arishonim shelo lidrosh bedvarim elu ela ish leish echad belvad v'hu shiya chacham umeven midato. So these matters could only be taught one-on-one, and the person, the student, has to be chacham umeven midato. Now, of course, the question is, how can the Rambam write Mor Nevuchim? After all, when you publish a book, you can no longer ensure that the student is ra'oi. You can no longer be sure that the student is understanding. So how is it permissible? And the Rambam addresses this issue. We'll get to it in a couple minutes, or maybe next week. V'achar kach mosrin lo roshei prakim, u'modin oso shemetz min adavar. Even then, only teaching the highlights. V'hu mevin mida'ato v'yodea sof adavar v'omko. Now we'll talk about why it's important to only teach roshei prakim. One could have imagined that the opposite is the case. It's so important to spell everything out and be absolutely clear to ensure that someone doesn't make a mistake. So why teach only Rosh Prakim? That seems to undermine your desire to make sure they understand correctly. We'll return to that question as well, and that relates to the nature of the material, which might only be nitan to be your Al Yidei Rosh Prakim. But we'll explain that as well. Though that is as well what he does in Emor Nevuchim, which is one of the reasons why it's such a hard work. V'dvarim elu dvarim amukim heim ad l'maod v'ein kol das v'das ruya l'sovlan v'alein amar shlomo b'chachmas o'derach mashal k'vashim l'vushecha kach amru chachamim v'feresh mashal zeh dvarim shehen kivshono shel olam yeh l'vushecha k'lomar l'cha l'vadcha v'al tidrosh osan b'rabim. So they can't be taught publicly. Not everybody has the kalim to be able to understand them. V'aleim amar yu l'cha l'vadcha v'ein l'zar mitach v'aleim amar dvash v'chalav tachas l'shonecha kach pirshu chachamim rishonim dvarim shein k'dvash v'chalav yu tachas l'shonecha. In Mor Nevuchim he elaborates on the mashal to dvash, saying that honey is sweet, but if you eat too much candy you'll get sick, and that likewise, when pursuing these forms inappropriately, instead of helping you, they could sicken you. In Perk Dalid, he continues, Kol advar ma'elu shedibru b'inyan zeh kemar medlihem. This is just the tip of the iceberg, what I've written in the first four prakim of Mishneh Torah. And Dvar Mamukim, the Gimel and Dalid, which is Maisa Bereishis, is not as omek as Aleph and Beis, which is Maisa Merkava. And he continues, and he tells you the halachos again in melamdin el liyachid, and afal pish eno mevin oso midaitu modin lo kol mashiach leidem mitvarim elu v'chule. The lama in melamdin oso berabim lefi shein kol adam yesh das rechava lahasig perush uvir kol advarim al borian. Not everybody has a lev rechava. Not everybody is so broad minded such that they could understand them. V'nyanei arba prakim elu, shebuchamesh mitzvos elu, heim shechamim harishonim karnosan pardes. And he writes that even among the G'dolei Yisrael, not everybody understood them. V'afal pi shegdolei Yisrael hayu, v'chachamim g'dolim hayu, lo kulam hayu, haya ben koach leido lahaseh kol advar malboyin. A very important point, which is a person could be a chachamatzum, they could be brilliant, but nevertheless, their intellect is not such that they have the capacity to comprehend these sorts of matters. This type of wisdom demands a certain type of thinking, which is not for everybody. And it's not just a question of intelligence or background or the like. It's a particular way of thinking which is suitable for some people and not for others. Vani Omer, She'en Roi L'tayel B'pardes. It's interesting that he says Ani Omer. The implication is that this is a chiddush of the Rambam. Ela Mishenismale Kriso Lechem Ubasa. Unless you have first filled your belly with bread and meat. The idea being that a person's ikar sustenance comes from lechem ubasar. That's what you fill yourself up on. if you fill yourself up on dessert, you'll get sick. So you need to fill yourself up on the main course, on lechem u'basar. The analogy might even go further, and it's interesting because in Mor Nevuchim, he doesn't use lechem u'basar, he uses, I think, lechem u'yayin. What's the difference is an interesting question. The lechem u'basar says, so what is the lechem u'basar that you first must fill yourself up on? Hu leida biur ha'asur v'amutar u'kiyotze bahen mishar ha'mitzvos. Basically, you have to know halacha and mitzvos. V'afal pishadvarim elu davar katan karusan chachamim. Even though davar ha'asur mutar is davar chacha, is considered davar katan, shayamu chachamim davar gadol ma'is merkavah davar katan havayas davar v'rava. V'afal pichein u'yinein lakdiman. Even though they're davar katan, they have to come first. Shein miyashvin daito shel adam tchila. They settle a person's mind first, meaning to say that they teach you how to think. When you go ahead and you see people study philosophy, or for that matter, mysticism, without first being grounded in Torah's Hanigla, so oftentimes that thought and that thought process is very ungrounded and unstable and leads to all sorts of far-fetched conclusions and ideas that are contrary to the Torah. So, A, you have to know what the Torah says first. And B, you also have to learn how to think. And Chachmas Hanigla teaches you how to think. The Ode, Sheina Tova Gdola Sheishpia Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Yishuv Ha'olam Hazeh Kedei Limcho L'Chayolam Haba. The Halacha allows for the functioning of society in this world, which allows us to do Torah mitzvos and chachma and the like, and thereby get olam haba. V'efshar she'yedim hakol. Moreover, as we noted, everyone could understand Torah and chachma sanigla ha'iser v'amutter gadol v'katan ish v'isha ba'alev rachav uva'alev katzar. Now, the question is, what exactly is meant by hadavar ha'aser v'amutter? Does the Rambam mean to say that you must master Shas and Poskim before turning to philosophy? Or does he mean that you have to have a basic understanding of halacha, davar aser v'amutter, you have to know what's right and what's wrong? But he doesn't necessarily mean that you have to know and have absolutely mastered everything before turning to philosophy and the like. And among different thinkers, there have been those who have advocated the former perspective, perhaps the Rivash is an example, and those who have argued the latter perspective. I suppose anyone who studies science and philosophy in yeshiva colleges, presumably, unless they think they've mastered Chas and Poskim, seems to be taking the latter perspective. At the same time, it might not be the case that all science and philosophy are the same. First of all, we saw the Rambam himself distinguishes between science and philosophy, and even within the realm of philosophy, the Yad HaKtana on this halacha points out that there's a big difference between a more comprehensive understanding of Torah, which is a prerequisite for L'tayel Bepardes and Maisim Merkava, and perhaps a more basic understanding, which allows one to pursue Ikari Emuna and Inyanim of Emuna. So it's not necessarily an all or nothing point. Even within the study of esoteric wisdom, the Rambam writes that a person first must study science and then study philosophy. He writes in the introduction, this is so since natural science borders on divine science. Maisa Bereishis borders on Maisa Merkava. And this, you don't have this. And its study precedes that of divine science in time, as has been made clear to whoever has engaged in speculation on these matters. So you have to study science, the Rambam writes, before you pursue philosophy. And what's most important is what the Rambam writes as well in his Hakdama to Mor Nevuchim, which is it's not enough to have even mastered Shas and Poskim. Elisha ben Avuya certainly was a bucky he had filled himself up with bread and wine, and yet his venture into Pardes led him off a cliff. And thus the Rambam stresses in the Hakdama to Mor Nevuchim that in addition to the intellectual preparation, a person must genuinely fear Hashem. Sod Hashem liRayav. And if a person is not grounded in Yirah Shamayim, even if they're grounded in Lachem Ubasar, then the study of philosophy will lead them astray. So one must be intellectually prepared, but one must also be firmly rooted and grounded in Yirah Shamayim. Now, the Rambam also writes that there are certain things that are usher to study. And this is true, presumably, even if one has reached a level where it is permitted for them to be metal bepardes and to study philosophy. What types of things are usher to study? So he deals with this in Hilchos Avodah Zarah Perek Beis, which I think you have a little bit later in the Makoros over here. Let's see where. It's page 22. Vinyan zeh hu shez hira alav ha-Torah upen tisai necha shamayma v'ra'isas ha-shemes v'aseirech v'asakochavim v'nidachta v'shtachavisa lohem. The Rambam writes that it is aser to study Sifrei Avodah Zarah because they might lead a person astray. And he writes, Tzivanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu shelo likros b'osan asfarim klal v'lo nehar herba v'lo bedavar midvareha. One may not study these matters at all, not to think about them, and nothing of the sort. And then the Rambam continues in Halacha Daled, v'lo avodah zarah bilvad hu she'aser lihipanos achareha b'machshava. It's not just avodah zarah that we are warned against entertaining in our minds and considering in our thoughts. Elakol machshava shegoremes lo la'adam la'akor ikar mikarei ha-Torah. Any machshava that may lead a person to uproot a principle from the principles of the Torah, musharin anu shalol ha'alos ha'libeinu. We may not allow that thought to enter our mind. V'lo nasiach da'atenu lekach v'nachshov v'nimshach achar hirhurei ha'lev. Mipnei shedaito shel adam k'tzara. V'lo kol adeos yicholos lahasig ha'emes al boryav. V'im yimashech kol adam achar machshavos libo nimtza machriv es olam lefi kotzer da'ato. And he continues later, he says that's what the Torah means when it says, V'lo sasuru acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem. Acharei levavchem is minus. So one may not think thoughts of minus, one may not read books of minus. And thus, even though there is a mitzvah, leidas Hashem, and there is value to studying philosophy, one may not pursue books of Avodah Zarah or books of minus. Now this, of course, leads one with the question, namely, how did the Rambam do it himself? The Rambam, as is clear from the Mor Nevuchim, studied Sifrei Avodah Zarah. He quotes from Sifrei Avodah Zarah. He studied Sifrei Minos. He seems to even advocate the reading of works which include Minos. And how do we justify what the Rambam did with what the Rambam says? And unfortunately, we're leaving off with a cliffhanger because we're out of time. Now, this is the type of cliffhanger that the Rambam says you're absolutely not allowed to leave off with. But since we're teaching this stuff publicly anyway, so we're ignoring the Rambam, so we'll ignore him one more time. Chas v'shalom, chas v'shalom. So don't read any Sifrei Avodah Zarah or Sifrei Minos until next week, when we can, Be'ezras Hashem, answer this question. Have a good Shabbos.